Good afternoon. Scott Spears along with you on this Wednesday, November the 1st. Oh my goodness, Halloween is all over, and we are into the month of November. I believe this is All Saints Day, unless somebody corrects me. 23 days until Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving comes early this year. I believe it's the 23rd, so you will have an extended Christmas shopping season. So 23 days until Thanksgiving, and what, 55 days until Christmas. Hard to believe. As I said, Scott Spears along with you here on the Now program, live on this Wednesday, November the 1st. Do want to remind you very quickly that we will have comprehensive live news coverage of the election next Tuesday, November the 7th. We will be on the air starting at 7:10 p.m., and we will go through the end of the local election calls. Terry Tackett will be at the Board of Elections. Linda Sims will be at Republican and Democratic headquarters, floating back and forth. Charlie Evers and Sean Kraft and myself will be here home base. We will not break away from the coverage throughout the night. So stay tuned next Tuesday, 7:10 p.m., through the call of elections, WWGH election coverage. And speaking of elections, like I say, they're less than a week away now, 6 days away. We are going to talk in this hour about national politics. We're going to talk about local races coming up, and we're going to talk about issues in the state of Ohio that all revolve around next week's election and the political process in general, with a gentleman who I've had on this program many times. Glad to welcome him to these microphones again. He was a candidate for 4th Ward City Council, losing by a razor-thin margin 2 years ago. Tanner Hale. Tanner, how are you?
I'm doing good, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Good to talk with you. When it gets around election time, being that you were a candidate a couple years ago, does it get the juices flowing?
Oh, definitely. You know, it's a very long process to go throughout the election year. You start off usually filing in like February or so. So you're at this for 9-10 months, virtually an entire year. And you get down to this time, and it's kind of nostalgic to look back and look at the entire campaign and, at times, you know, wish that you could have some more time to continue to get out and reach the voters and to spread your message. But as the next week comes in, the candidates are going to work harder and harder, and the voters are going to become more and more interested. And it becomes a fun week, but I'm sure all the candidates are, I think they're feeling a bit nervous, because if you're not, then you're not running the campaign right. So I hope that all the candidates are doing well out there, because 2 years ago, I'll admit, I was a wreck. I wasn't handling it too well, but I just wanted to do as well as I could. So that's what most of the candidates, I assume, are feeling right now.
A lot of interesting elections this year, so let's get right into it and kind of get your thoughts. Now, we'll start with the president of city council. Now, this is interesting because Kate Fisher is the current president of city council, but she was never elected. Dr. Gray did not finish his term, so Kate Fisher was appointed president of city council back in the summer. She is not going to be on the ballot. She's a write-in candidate, and she's running against a gentleman who has never held public office. He's an assistant principal at Harding High School, Todd Schneider. So how do you see this?
So basically what's happening is, so when Scott Gray couldn't get his petitions in, he couldn't show up on the partisan ballot. and no one was able to make the partisan ballot. So the only way Kate Fisher would have been able to run is if she were to run as an independent, which is what Todd Schneider is doing. Now, Todd Schneider is the only candidate that's going to show up on the ballot, virtually guaranteeing him a win in this election as long as he, you know, gets more votes than any write-ins, which is, you know, in political perspective, 100% likely. But this is interesting because I cannot imagine Kate Fisher not running in 2019. And I think the whole writing campaign is to boost her name ID so that she can do better in 2019, when I assume it will be Todd Schneider running versus Kate Fisher. I think this is a long out process. This race doesn't mean much right now, but I think what the future holds for this race is what really could be striking to voters. And I'm really interested to see how Kate Fisher does and how many write-ins she gets, because, again, she doesn't have any path to victory. But I think this is just setting up for a potential run 2 years from now.
So you believe with 100% accuracy that Kate Fisher is probably not going to win this?
Yeah, there's not any path to victory for Kate Fisher. And I'm not saying anything that she doesn't know herself. I think that this is an opportunity for her to continue to engage the public, and her serving on city council now, I think, is all just a momentum boost to push her to run in a couple years from now, when she can actually file and be on the ballot and participate in a partisan primary. All these things, eventually, I think she wants to do, but the way that the whole petition thing messed up with Scott Gray, and, you know, Scott Gray is a very busy man. I like Scott a lot. He's a really good guy with a really good heart, and Marion loves him to death. But his hands are just completely full with life, you know, taking care of the kids and his job. So I completely empathized and understood. But this is just the way that the cards were drawn to handle the situation. And, you know, hats off to him for the work he's done. And, you know, right now I think this is an opportunity for Todd Schneider to also get out. And he's been working really, really hard as well. You know, he's not taking his foot off the gas pedal at all. And Todd Schneider has a great message, and overall, I think he's going to serve this community well over the next 2 years.
So, is it just luck that Todd happened to file a petition when nobody else did?
You know, I'm sure Todd can answer that a lot better than I could, but I think that he just seized an opportunity. I think that he saw, you know, the Democrats didn't file a candidate, and the Republicans didn't file a candidate. So maybe he wanted to take the opportunity to just kind of spread his message across Marion and what he envisions. You know, he loves Marion to death. He knows this place is his home. He loves this place with every ounce of his being. And I really think he just wanted to seize the opportunity. And hats off to him for doing it, because he was the only person in Marion that did it.
So you believe it's pretty well a slam dunk president of city council for Todd Schneider?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, let's go to Ward 1, city council. Ralph Cumston, the longtime incumbent, running against Robert Landon. Now, interestingly enough, neither of these gentlemen participated in the League of Women Voters Candidates Night, and I would say Landon on Facebook and social media has been a little more outspoken than other candidates. How do you see that one?
So I envision Ralph Cumston's going to win this race. He's a stiff incumbent. He's well known across the district. Now, Robert Landon, he's a young guy. He's a really young guy, and he's very outspoken and passionate, and, you know, he's really trying to reach out to you know, that kind of change vote in Marion. But I don't imagine that Ralph Cumston loses his seat here. I think that Robert Landon is, you know, doing, you know, he's really trying to help the party by running and ensuring that he continues to get his name out there and tries to serve his community. But overall, I think Ralph Cumston is going to end up walking away with this one.
With what accuracy would you say that?
Well, the district leans more Democratic, if we want to break down the demographics. And Ralph Cumson is a stiff incumbent. He won his race very impressively a couple of years ago. I really think that Ralph Cumson is serving that district very well. And I think that the voters are recognizing that, and I think they're going to make that decision on Election Day.
Second and third ward are unopposed, so we will move past those. And then we get into your old ward, the fourth ward, and for the first time...
Third ward.
And for the first time in a long, long time, this is up for grabs because Mike Thomas is not running for re-election in that ward. We have Jason Schauber, who has been a city councilman before, running against Bob Brown, who I also think has been a city councilman before. What do you think happened here? Why did Mike Thomas not run for re-election in that ward? And how do you it's an open seat.
Well, I can't attest to what the councilman decided when he wanted to run for at-large. That was a decision I'm sure that he made with his family and with his supporters. With this race, Jason Schauber used to be on council at large, so he does have citywide name recognition. Even though he's not, served for a while, I want to say 6 years off the top of my head. I'd have to go back and look, but it's been a while, so I'm interested to see him run in the third ward. It is a traditionally Democratic district. This is a district that also, and we're going to get into some of the issues later, but back in 2015, the year I ran, the third ward actually voted for issue three, which was to legalize marijuana medically and recreationally. So this is a district that's really it's really different compared to the rest of the city when it comes to what they expect out of the representatives, what they want to be done at the state and federal levels. So this race is honestly going to be tight. I think it's going to be razor tight, just like it was a couple years ago. I don't imagine that the race is going to be a blowout by either side. I really think that this is going to be a race that comes down within the final 50 to 100 votes.
What do you know about Bob Brown?
I haven't got the pleasure to meet Bob Brown yet. I can only go off of what other people have told me about him, and he's a good man with a good heart from what I've heard. But I don't think it's fair that I attest to how he is if I haven't really got to meet the guy. But I know he's been working very hard to go across the district and express to constituents the same way that I tried to a couple years ago, to go all across the district and knock on every single door that I could find and really just engage with the community and ask voters what's important to them and ask how I can be a better representative to those people. And yeah, I think that he's really, I think his message is resonating. I think that he's really working hard to kind of signify what he wants to do on city council and how he can turn Marion around. But I'm really interested in this race because, number one, it was the race I ran 2 years ago, and I would like Bob Brown to win. But, this is really just an incredible time to look at a district that was traditionally a slam dunk, now is just a virtually tight race, and I don't imagine it'll be any different this year.
If you had to pick a winner, who do you think will win it?
I'm going to go with Bob Brown. I think that the district, with its leanings towards the Democratic Party, I think that Bob Brown is going to pick up the victory, especially previously serving on city council. But again, luckily I'm not a betting man, so I guess we'll have to find out on election day.
And then, as I said, it's the fourth ward that's unopposed. Debbie Blevins is safe. So we go to the fifth ward. The fifth ward, very interesting. The incumbent is Leslie Cunningham, and she's running against the person she defeated 2 years ago, former councilman in the fifth ward, Scott Kreider. How do you see this?
Well, a couple of years ago, Scott Kreider was on city council at large. This is going to be an interesting race. I think Leslie is is likely to win. I won't rule anything out, but I think that I think the district leans a little more Republican. It's like a sixth ward, but a little bit lighter when it comes to the Republican leanings. So, I think this is going to be a tight race as well. I expect this to be within 70, 80 votes. I don't know how hard Leslie's been going out and talking to the voters. And as you can see, that's the biggest thing that you have to do when it comes to running for Marion City Council from a candidate. When 2 years ago, I knocked on, 17,000-18,000 doors. And that was the key in the race, was really getting out and talking to voters. And I don't know if Leslie has done that this cycle. I'm assuming that, she's tried to get out a few times, but, really, I think that this race is going to just come down to who got out and worked harder. And I know that Scott's been out and he's been active, and he running for state rep last year was a big, big coup. So I'm interested to see what happens here.
And you would pick at this point?
I predict it will be a tight race. I don't know which way the fence will go. I mean, likely, if I was a betting man, and like I said, luckily I'm not, I would probably go with Leslie. But again, we're just going to have to see.
And who did Leslie defeat 2 years ago?
John Smith.
John Smith, that's right. And Scott Kreider was on at large, and he lost that race.
Yes.
Yeah, got it. Okay, now we're back. Now, this is another interesting one, the 6th Ward, because you have Rick Huddle, who has ran for things, but not the 6th Ward. He was appointed in the last 2 years to finish a term, running against Chris Kasotis, who ran for Clerk of Courts 2 years ago. Or last year, excuse me. How do you see this? Chris Kasotis and Rick Huddle.
I like Chris. I think Chris is a very smart guy. I was an early college student when he was towards the end of his college career, and I got to know Chris a little bit. And, he's a stellar guy, and I think he would represent the 6th Ward very well. But the challenging thing is the 6th Ward is Republican. It's the part of the city that is the most suburban when it comes to the demographics. And really, I think this race, I don't think it's going to be that tight. I think that Rick Huddle's going to win, and it's not going to be that close. But again, I think that the voters still have a choice to make, and I would encourage them to vote for Chris Kasotis, because I think that this is really, I think this is a real determination on what our city should be. And I think that Chris would really serve the district well. I know he'd be active and engaged with the community and take those ideas and bring them forward to Marion City Council. But I don't imagine this district going Democratic as much as I would like it to. But so I'm going to go ahead and go with Rick Huddle on this one.
Now, the at-large city council seats are very interesting this time, because you have the current three at-large council people, Becky Gustin, Kevin Norris, and Josh Daniels, all running for re-election. And now you have Mike Thomas, the former long-term third ward councilman, running for an at-large seat. So somebody who is currently on council will have to go. Who do you think's going to go?
That's a really good question. When it comes down to it, Mike Thomas is the only candidate that doesn't have citywide name rec when it comes to being on a ballot. So that's an immediate thing to take note of when we look at this race. Kevin Norris is a one-time candidate on the ballot, so that may factor in as well. And I guess I feel like when it comes down to this race going citywide, I think that there could be some state and federal politics that influence this race as well. How does the makeup of the city feel about what's going on in Washington? How does the makeup of the city feel when it comes to what's going on in Columbus? And ultimately, I think the voters, I think it comes down to turnout. If the 6th Ward and 5th Ward turn out very well, and I think that, they traditionally do, I think that really can alter this race. And you have three Democrats and one Republican that's running for this seat. it's really hard to gauge that metric. You really have to have a consistent amount of polling, which I don't know if it exists on this race. So, like you mentioned, someone's going to have to go. I'm assuming with Mike Thomas's lack of citywide name rec when it comes to being on the ballot, I think that can hurt, as well as Kevin Norris only being a one-time candidate. I think Josh Daniels is pretty safe. I think that Becky Gustin, I think she's likely to be safe as well. So I think it comes down to Mike Thomas and Kevin Norris on this.
Now, wouldn't you say, though, because three of these candidates are Democratic, Mike Thomas, Josh Daniels, and Becky Gustin, and we have one Republican, Kevin Norris, wouldn't you say that Kevin Norris would be safe?
Not necessarily, because you get to pick three candidates when it comes to being on a city council at large. So to all the voters that are listening, when you go to the ballot box, you're going to get to choose three different candidates, meaning you could pick Kevin Norris and you could pick two Democratic candidates. So the way that the ballot is structured in this race is really, it virtually guarantees, the two Democrats, obviously, because you have to elect two of the Democrats. But it really comes down to, are voters going to pick two Democrats and a Republican, or are they going to pick all Democratic candidates? And with what's going on in the state and federal elections, we very well could see them make the entire city council go three Democrats. But again, I think it comes down to Kevin Norris and Michael Thomas. I don't know what's going to end up happening when it comes to how the voters are going to decipher between those three candidates and which one they exclude. It very well could be the name ID, just not knowing Mike Thomas. But again, we have a very interesting night next Tuesday.
So if you were a betting person, who do you see going?
I assume that Kevin Norris doesn't get reelected.
Now, why Kevin Norris the only Republican?
Because I think that the city is going to select three Democratic candidates. I think this is a Democratic year when it really comes down to the makeup of the city. I think that we're going to have higher turnout in the third ward, which is going to be very, I think that's going to hold a lot of weight for Mr. Thomas. I think that Mike Thomas has been doing a lot to reach out to second ward voters to increase that turnout, which if they begin to turn out as well, I don't know if the Republican leanings of the city can make up for those lost votes. And Kevin Norris, last time he was on the ballot, he stood in front of the Coliseum and handed out literature because he didn't have any literature to give out throughout the entire year. And winning that race was a complete shock to everybody. So I don't know if he can turn that around. One thing that can be said about Mr. Thomas is he's won his race 11 times when he ran for a third ward city council. And as someone that was his former opponent, I think that's more than just luck and a firm handshake. I think that Michael Thomas knows how to connect with the voters. It's clear with his wins in the elections that that's what he's going to do. So again, I'm really interested in what's going to happen, but 11 wins versus one win, I think will speak some volume to how they're reaching out to voters.
Here is a take on this. As you just said, winning that last time was, as you say, a shock for Kevin Norris, and Scott Kreider was the one who got booted. Now, how I saw that was it did matter that he was Republican, because something I noticed last year, which certainly got reaffirmed, and we will have nowhere near the turnout we had last year, but it was quite apparent to me that people do vote the R and the D, because Republicans won every race last year in Marion County except sheriff, and they won it by just about the same amount. All races won it by just about the same amount. So, again, I think that plays into Kevin Norris's hand being the only R in that bunch. And but then again, I look at Mike Thomas and I think, well, Mike
I don't think he would leave his ward if he didn't feel he could get this position. But you got to remember, Josh Daniels and Becky Gustin, you think they're slam dunks? I don't know if they are. If I remember last time, Josh Daniels got high votes, and didn't Kevin Norris get more votes than Becky Gustin? Or wasn't that pretty close?
It was Josh Daniels with the most votes. I believe Kevin at 2 and Becky at 3. All very comfortably. There was 5 candidates in the race. The top 3, I think, each had at least 500, 600 more votes than 4th place, so they could get elected.
Right, which in my opinion leads me to believe that I can't imagine it will be 3 Democrats.
Yeah, and it very well could go 2 Democrats and a Republican. But again, it comes down to how are the voters going to select that 3rd candidate? Because you're going to have to pick 2. Are the Republican voters just going to solely pick the Republican candidate? Are the Democrats going to vote in block for all 3 of them? When it comes down to the makeup, it's a very difficult election to gauge because you just simply don't know what people are going to be doing with that 3rd choice.
Well, if Kevin Norris put in as little time as you say he did last time and finished ahead of Becky Gustin, don't you think that creates a conundrum?
Well, I think that 2015 is a lot different than 2017 when it comes to what we expect out of the election. Typically in Marion, off your elections favor Democrats. And that was a mayoral year that Kevin Norris did very well in. The voter turnout was high. There's a lot more candidates on the ballot, which I think voted well for the only serious Republican at-large candidate. But this election right here, it's different because there's, instead of 5 candidates, there's 4. And Republican voters, they were picking 2 Republicans and a Democrat, or maybe just 2 Republicans in general. But what they were doing in this election, and this is something that a lot of people were expressing, as they've already been hitting the ballot boxes since the second week of October, is that 3rd vote has been very challenging, and it's deciphering between do they want to pick the Republican, or do they want an all Democratic council. So at the end of the day, I really do believe this race is going to come down to Mike Thomas and Kevin Norris.
And you say Kevin Norris will probably go.
I think Kevin Norris doesn't get reelected.
Okay.
But I think Tuesday makes a very interesting day.
I think that'll be an interesting race. If everything you just said bodes true, it sounds like a very Democrat city council. Why do you think that is?
Well, traditionally the city council's already been Democratic, so it's nothing full of surprises. The majority of the wards in the race, or in these races, are Democratic leaning in the first place. Some Democrats face no opposition. And in the at-large race, the Democrats are guaranteed a majority in the at-large. So at the end of the day, I don't think it's very hard to grasp that Democrats are still going to walk away with a majority on council. They're not going to lose any seats that they previously had before, maybe with the exception of the 3rd ward race, which I anticipate it's going to be a very, very tight race. But it really comes down to, I think, the R's and the D's, and that matters in these districts. It certainly mattered when it came to my race 2 years ago. So I'm really interested to see what ends up happening.
And moving on, another big issue, the statewide issue that is getting the most attention is Issue 2. Now, for people who don't understand, Issue 2, if you vote yes, it would mean that the drug companies can no longer charge the state any more than they charge the Veterans Administration. The Veterans Administration pays 20 to 24% less than the state does at this point. If you vote no, nothing changes. A lot of money being spent on this. How do you see this one going?
It's really hard to gauge on this, and especially with issues, because a lot of time it's a game time decision. I can tell you with myself, I'm on the fence as well, because one issue sounds like it could be very, very impactful to the amount of money that we spend on drug prices. And this is going to be really, really tight, and politically it's really, really hard to gauge. But I think you have to kind of look at the backers that are supporting this. You have the people that are supporting this, and especially you have this movement of, we want to see the drug prices drop for all Ohioans. But that's not what this issue is going to do at all. If you pay for private insurance, then this virtually doesn't even affect you. This is going to come down to the Ohioans that rely on state health insurance, that rely on some kind of public option, and how that money is going to be able to be deciphered. But there's being ads run that support issue two that claim that this is going to be a tax cut. That is not true. And this is really just going to come down to what is the medical community think? And the medical community is really thinking that this is a bad idea. The Ohio Hospital Association, the Ohio Children's Hospital Association, on the Chamber of Commerce as well, a business entity, NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Health of Ohio, they are all coming out against this. And I think that's going to hold some weight. But interestingly enough, those that support this is Bernie Sanders, Cincinnati's mayor. You see a big insurgency from Cincinnati that really wants this issue to pass. So ultimately, I think it's going to come down to the wire. I expect this issue to go within 5 to 10 points. I feel that no is going to be chosen, just because I think there's so much cloud in this race, and there's so much information that's being tossed around on both sides. People are likely to know, because at least if we don't have a good understanding on if the drug prices are actually going to fall, if this is actually going to impact Ohioans, then we can always start over. But it's dangerous to vote for a bill that we're very unsure of. We saw that 2 years ago with issue three, with the marijuana issue coming up on the ballot. When voters are uncertain if the issue is going to impact them, they're going to vote no. So
here,
I know you'll ask my prediction. I'll go ahead and say no.
No, I'm going to ask that. But here's because we've done many shows on issue two here. And what I cannot quite understand is that you're right, all those groups that you mentioned do support no, but it seems like the politicians are supporting yes. Now, here's what I know. Whether this passes or not, the politician's paycheck is not going to change, the financial part of it. All of the medical community could be impacted financially because of this. And the other thing we know is that the money that's being spent to support yes is about $6.5 million from AIDS research. The money that's being spent to fund the no campaign, $16.5 million from the pharmaceutical company. So my question is, if the idea is that we're just going to raise the prices on the veterans and we can't do this anyway, why would the pharmaceutical companies, who would benefit from charging people more money, be paying $10 million more dollars to support no for something that would benefit them?
So this really affects their profit margins when it comes to what this bill actually is going to end up changing. It's true, the pharmaceutical companies are spending millions and millions of dollars actively opposing this issue and telling voters to vote no. And I think the reason why they want to do this It is simply, you know, I want to note something first when it comes to who opposes and who supports. It's interesting to see that the pharmaceutical companies are with the hospital association, even with the Children's Hospital Association, because this is really, I think this is a really bad piece of legislation. Like, I just don't think that politicians that you mentioned are really thinking this out. It sounds good, and changing something usually sounds better than changing nothing. But really, when it comes down to it, the mental health community, the pharmaceutical companies, the hospital associations, a lot of the caregivers are saying this is really not going to affect drug prices. If anything, this could actually spur a hike in drug prices. And I think the pharmaceutical companies, depending on how voters generally feel about pharma, and I know that they have a typically bad reputation, I still think that they're likely to vote no, because, again, this really doesn't affect all Ohioans. In fact, it doesn't even help half of Ohioans. This helps the Ohioans that rely on that public option for health insurance, and overall, this piece of legislation was something very similar to what was done out in California, which actually failed there. So I think this is purely an attempt to take on the pharmaceutical interest and the industry. And I don't think that it's going, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I just think that this is more of a political prop, and it's being done in Ohio because this could spur an effect across the nation. And I don't think this is really an intended piece of legislation that is supposed to affect drug prices for Ohioans that need it.
Well, the conundrum here is, again, if the drug prices would go up, which is what they're saying would happen, why all these groups are supporting it, if they did, the pharmaceutical company would make more money because they would be able to charge the veterans more. And one of the odd things is that if it did work the other way, if they did have to drop the price of Medicaid and PharmEx programs in Ohio, it could save Ohio $600 million in the budget. If nothing changes, nothing changes. And the state continues to pay what they pay if the pharmaceutical company raises the price.
So, and there's also the question that's being raised, this is from Cincinnati. Drug prices, and when it comes down to it, the drug companies. That's going to infringe on their ability to maximize their profit margins, which comes exactly to what you and I were both kind of noting. In our comments, Scott, was, in other words, they might actually raise the drug prices raised by people that have private insurance. So it all comes back down to cost shifting. It's not the amount of money being spent on drug prices. It's who is catching the brunt of the cost.
Well, we had a doctor on who analyzed this, Dr. Art Uhlein, formerly of the Today Show, and what he said in regard to that was that private insurers will not be affected because the second that a private insurer said we're going to raise the price of our insurance to fill this gap in where we're losing money to the state, that's when a new private insurer would come into the state of Ohio and pick up all this business, because essentially that's the problem. The state cannot negotiate with the drug company. The drug company can say, we'll charge you whatever we want. The VA can negotiate, and they're paying 24% less. Private insurance companies can negotiate. They can go to another place. And what he said to me was, Dr. Art Uhlein, who doesn't live in Ohio and isn't paid by either side, he said if the PharmEx company said, well, we're going to raise the price on veterans, the first thing that would happen is another pharmaceutical company would say, or the VH would say, hey, any pharmaceutical company in the country, that wants our business, come in with the lowest bid, and you will get our business. And then again, the state cannot be charged more than them. Why is it bad to keep the state away from negotiating their cost?
And I think that you make up, I think that the doctor brought some very excellent points coming forward. And really, what everybody wants is for the state of Ohio to be able to petition and negotiate for better drug prices for the citizens, which underlays back to why the politicians are generally supporting issue two. Is obviously, I feel that a lot of them want to have more say and more influence on what the drug prices are going to be and how they're going to lower it. But that this bill virtually does no effect to those with private insurance unless it actually ends up raising the drug prices, which if it does, then that cost is just going to get shifted to those with private insurance. So if you have a private insurance, I see high risk and very, very low reward when it comes to the drug prices. And I think that that will have some kind of effect when it comes to the ballot box. But again, it deciphers between if you have that private plan, that plan for your family that you may get through your employer, or if you have a public option and you're receiving Medicaid, Medicare, that's where I think that's where the fireworks really go off when it comes to this issue. But overall, I do anticipate that this is going to get shot down in the same way that it was shot down in California.
It'll be interesting. Now, medical marijuana is something that we passed as a state a few years ago. And now the idea of dispensaries are becoming issues. Monday night, City Council held an open meeting on the idea of having one in Marion. What do you think?
So I do have some reservations immediately. My first reservation would simply come down to the placement of the dispensary. I worried about this significantly when it came down to the district I was running for a couple years ago, and this is why I voted no on issue three 2 years ago. I worry that these dispensaries are going to get put in very vulnerable areas, and I think that it's going to be used to exploit some of the most vulnerable people, and that's what I kind of worry about here. Is I don't expect them to put this out by where the city of Marion is really booming, like out by Ohio State Marion. I don't expect them to do that. I expect them to put this back on the north side of Marion or back on the west side of Marion in areas that are clearly having some economic struggles, having some inabilities to create jobs and to provide for families. And I really, really, really feel that the dispensary is going to get put into an area that is going to impact people that really, really could benefit from not having it. And I know that this is a very touchy issue, and it's very controversial, but if it came down to it, I would likely rather not have a dispensary in Marion, and I'd rather a more rural county take on the dispensary, but this is not something that's going to be happening anytime soon. We won't expect this for at least 2-3 years, so if we see a little more economic development, I would like to see a dispensary maybe come into the fold more on the east side of town. But for the time being, I don't really support a dispensary.
Do you think this is something that could create a lot of tax money? Because it's my understanding that only one dispensary can be put in a certain area of Ohio, which encompasses several different counties, that if people did want to buy it, the closest shot for them would be Marion. Wouldn't that bring people... I mean, it's going to happen irregardless in one of these counties. Wouldn't it bring those people into Marion because they cannot open one in their county, and while these people are here, wouldn't they be able to eat at our restaurants, stay at our motels, go to our places?
Well, I don't think a medical marijuana dispensary is going to be like Disney World. I don't think families are going to want to stay in motels so they can get...
They'll definitely want to eat the food.
Of course. This is really... in that point, but I'm not willing to put Marion citizens' best interest behind over what could potentially bring in some money and tax revenue. The dispensary issue, and this is already being seen a little bit in Colorado, and I do support decriminalization of marijuana. I certainly do, but I'm not okay with some of these drug companies and those that are responsible for these dispensaries to put that dispensary in locations that could be harmful to vulnerable citizens. You know, we have to look at the macroscopic drug issue, and really, are those that are reliant on drugs, are they criminals, or are they addicts, or are they people that really could be vulnerable and have an issue with overcoming something? And that's what I worry about when it comes to the dispensaries. We've seen time and time again that these are being used to exploit. I mean, back 2 years ago, they wanted to place dispensaries by using a Starbucks model. Wherever there is a Starbucks, they wanted to put five or six of them.
Tanner,
and they wanted to strictly put them in communities that were... more likely to have minorities, more likely to have drug addiction, more likely to have low places of employment.
It's purely
by profit. So this is really the thing that concerns me the most. But I'm willing to gauge this interest and discussion over time and ultimately see if something on the east side of Marion could eventually work. But for the time being, I really think it's a dangerous precedent.
We have to go to break. Do you want to hang up or call back in about 10 minutes and we'll finish up this and a little bit on national politics?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Talk to you in about 10 minutes and talk to you, the audience, in about 10 minutes. Stay tuned.
The WWGH offices are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for prize pickup. The WWGH offices are located at 559 East Center Street in the lower level of the Belltone Building. Thank you so much, Fair.